I know more about sports than you, good sir.
Tis to laugh. Dare I say my grandmother could outsport you any day of the week.
Gentlemen, may I borrow your ear for a moment?
But of course!
BetDSI.net is an awesome site where you can play for free and win real cash. Are you a sports nut with a lot of confidence?
Thoroughly.
Maybe you're a casual fan with a flair for the stats.
Guilty!
Put your knowledge to the test and win real cash at BetDSI.net. It's fun, it's entertaining, and it's just another way to enjoy the sport you already love. It's BetDSI.net.
Huzzah!
Research suggests that your brain can be exercised like a muscle. So this show totally counts as a workout. Expect frequent cramping and spasms. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I left my heart in San Francisco.
I'm getting a little worried now. We gotta check. Did somebody kidnap Andrew Nye and replace him with somebody funny? What's that update? John Gibbons there to... What was it again? Kevin Plarr was there to offer moral support. John Gibbons was there to keep the peace or something like that. Anyhow, that is the state of the franchise function, which has been rebranded. Like that word rebranded as the leadoff. It's a season's ticket holder fan forum. You can watch it tonight at 7 p.m. on sportsnet.ca. Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins, John Gibbons, and Kevin Pillar will be in attendance answering questions from season's ticket holders. And I've thrown a column up in sportsnet.ca pleading that we turn the page in Alex Anthopoulos, more or less. The Super Bowl. When's the Super Bowl being played? It's this Sunday, right? Yeah, the Super... I'm just kidding. Super Bowl goes this Sunday. And, we've had a lot of people on talking about all the important stuff, how good Cam Newton is, Ted Ginn Jr. and the defense and how underrated Carolina defense is, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not interested in that stuff. I'm interested in the fun stuff going on in the Super Bowl. So I'm going to bring in Ray Ratto, senior insider for CSN Bay Area. You can follow him on Twitter at RattoCSN. You love the Super Bowl, don't you? Especially when it's in your own backyard.
The Super Bowl is an abattoir with shiny lights. It stinks. San Francisco is not a great place to hold it unless the stadium is nearby.
Right.
Most people are already very much off put by the hour and 10 bus ride with a police escort to and from Santa Clara, which is where the game is being played. It's sort of like having a Super Bowl in Hamilton, but everybody's staying in Toronto.
Yes.
That's the best way to explain it.
Wow. Yeah, that doesn't really create a sense of community, does it? A sense of warmth.
And beyond that, there's just sort of this, San Francisco is a small town geographically. And when the NFL comes to your town, they basically take it over and make you pay for their right to take it over. So they've sealed off a bunch of streets. They've made, getting in and getting out of town difficult. So the locals, who are already not generally predisposed to get excited about other teams having a party, in their hall, are now more irked by the expenditure and the difficulty of getting around. It came here sort of, under a bit of a cloud, and nothing has happened so far to change that. In fact, yesterday, Jed York, the owner of the 49ers, got on the wrong side of the Girl Scouts. So
I heard that.
That's been a metaphor for the entire week, really.
So basically, he's told the Girl Scouts that they can't hold a gathering at Levi's Stadium because he can make more money with a concert. Basically, right?
Well, basically, he didn't tell them. I think their business department, did this deal with the Girl Scouts. The 1,200 Girl Scouts in Northern California who sold the most cookies got invited to basically a glorified sleepover at the stadium in May.
Right.
Well, they get a letter yesterday saying that we have to cancel the contract because there's a concert coming in that we are going to book. They didn't say who it was. They simply said, we can't accommodate you. And according to the contract, they are entitled to do that. But it just looks bad. And then what made it worse was that Jed York was in San Francisco tweeting out a picture of himself buying Girl Scout cookies off the street.
Oh.
Exactly. So it's just a real bad optic.
Eesh.
And it you know, at first, you know, the San Jose Mercury broke the news. Deadspin picked it up. It went viral for about 2 hours. And then somebody decided the damage control was clearly indicated. So what they did was they rescheduled the Girl Scouts for a week later and promised to pick up all the expenses, which they hadn't before. But that's one of those things that if you're paying attention at all and you're confronted with this problem, it makes far more sense to call the Girl Scouts and say, look, we're in a jam, but what we'll do is do this ahead of time, before Deadspin gets it, before the Mercury News gets it, before the nation's media sees yet again what a bumbling oaf Jed York can look like. And that just sort of, it's like I said, it's a metaphor for the week. It's a metaphor for Jed's ownership. It just looks bad. And with a little bit of foresight, they could have worked this all out. But they don't do foresight. They wait till something stinks and then try to figure out how to make it smell less bad.
It's not even really. I mean, the Super Bowl is not the biggest sports event in the Bay Area this weekend, is it, as you point out?
Well, I mean, you know, truthfully, the Warriors are hosting Oklahoma City, which is basically a job interview for Kevin Durant.
That's what you said. The first one-man job fair where 19,000 people have to pay to park, eat, and watch.
Yes. The NFL usually likes to have sort of one event that they can send the rich folks to before the game itself. So they did a deal with the NBA and the Warriors to schedule Warriors and Oklahoma City the night before. And so you'll see a lot of, if you watch the game at all, you'll see a lot of swells in row one that you don't normally see. And those will be people in for the Super Bowl who want to see the Warriors because they put on their usual standard show like they did last night in Washington. So that's probably the thing that most of the celebrities are looking forward to more than the Super Bowl the next day. The Super Bowl is a business opportunity. It's not a fun thing to attend.
Yes.
But you go there because your agent wants you to be seen or you're trying to do a business deal off of it. The Super Bowl is essentially a trade fair with a football game hanging off the end of it. That's really what this is about. And the best party that the NFL will throw all weekend or all week is Warriors Thunder.
Which is fascinating because it's, as you point out, in Oakland. And, boy, that's a city the NFL it just doesn't really like, does it?
Well, it doesn't like Oakland because Oakland won't play stadium ball with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Raiders want a new stadium, and the politicians in Oakland have done a unique thing and said, we don't have the money for it, and we're not going to go out of our way to look for it. You know, we have other concerns. And the last time we did business with you guys, you stuck us with a massive bond issue that we're still paying off, and you're trying to get out of it. So, A, we're not going to do you any favors, and B, if we did want to do you a favor, we couldn't do you a favor. So it's very likely that the Raiders will be leaving Oakland in 2017, either for San Diego if the Chargers decide to go through with their plan to move to L.A., or L.A. if the Chargers suddenly come to an accommodation with the city of San Diego and get a stadium built.
I was going to say, Oakland would there not have to be a promise of a stadium in San Diego first? Because what's the point of, you know, hey, we're moving to the city that you guys just left because you didn't like the stadium and didn't think you were going to get one?
Well, I think there's still sort of this weird game of chicken going on.
Okay.
that the city of San Diego is now seeing that their guy is ready to go, and he's got a way out. And I don't know that they ever took that fully seriously before. Now they do, and now they have a decision to make. Do we give in to this guy's demands and build a stadium so that we can keep the team? Do we let him go because we hate him so much, but build the stadium anyway for a team we really don't want? Or do we simply go without the National Football League?
Right.
And, you know, those are things that elections hinge on. You know, the mayor who lost the NFL, you know, not a bad look on posters.
Yeah.
So basically, the Raiders are waiting for the Chargers to tell them what they're allowed to do. And the city of Oakland is waiting around for the Raiders to make up their mind so that they can go about the business of trying to scrape up enough money to keep the A's, which will be the last team that they have once the Warriors go to San Francisco.
Right. In conversation with Ray Ratto, senior insider for CSN Bay Area. What's the most interesting story to you at the Super Bowl? Football related. What's the most interesting story to you at this year's event, this year's game, if you want to call it that?
The most interesting story is probably how we as media reconcile the fact that we need Cam Newton to be polarizing, when in fact, he's not that polarizing. I mean, I don't think many people, just general football fans, look at Newton and see the weird dichotomies that the media is saying that are there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just watching that play out is more interesting than really even the game itself, because there are not many other compelling characters. Even Peyton Manning, the argument with him is, gee, if he wins another Super Bowl, what's his legacy? Well, his legacy will be the same either way. You know, nothing's going to change. I mean, maybe it helps persuade him to go out on top and retire, but he might retire anyway. I mean, you know, so it's really about sort of two competing forced narratives. And of the two, the imagined polarization that Cam Newton is allegedly capable of, while not really being capable of it, is to me the more compelling.
Right. Well, I mean, we want every now and then, those of us in the media, you do like a story to come along that makes you think that you're dealing with something serious. And I've thought that part of the issue, not just the Super Bowl, but any one of those big events where there's kind of organized media availability, is everybody wants to be, and I include myself in this, every now and then you want to be able to say, well, I dealt with a serious societal issue this time, instead of who's going to be the, who's going to be the backup, or who's going to be the starting middle linebacker. I dealt with a serious issue here. I dealt with racism. And I think that's part of it. We're kind of always looking for that, aren't we?
Well, yeah, but I think, you know, look, there are plenty of big issues that can confront anybody here this week. There's the CTE thing, which reared its ugly head again yesterday.
Kenny Stabler, yeah.
When Ken Stabler was found to have had stage 3 CTE in the autopsy after he died, you know, one more reminder that basically football is brain damage on the hoof. There's that. There's sort of stadium blackmail. I mean, we just saw the way the NFL does business among its own owners, where they screw one guy cheerfully and to take care of another guy that they like less. So in a lot of ways, there are plenty of storylines. The problem with the Newton storyline is that it's not really confronting racism as much as it is confronting the notion that we have decided the narrative about Cam Newton should be that he's polarizing.
Mm-hmm.
So we invent the polarization straw man. And we're sort of out over our skis on a story that I don't think the country cares that much about, because they don't see it the way we do.
Right.
I mean, does Cam Newton confront racism? Yes. As a successful black quarterback, that's going to be perpetual. Also, as maybe the first black quarterback to be considered the best quarterback in the National Football League, you know, that's something new as well. But that's not how this is being framed. This is being framed as Cam Newton, the spoiled, arrogant, narcissistic, self-involved guy. And, you know, is he that? And if he is, are people in America genuinely that annoyed by it? Mm-hmm. And I don't think they are. I think it's a very narrow narrative that we've constructed to contrive the bigger issue that you were just talking about, when in fact it's not a bigger issue. It's a complicated issue that we don't really feel like tackling for all of its complications.
Storato, great stuff as always. A privilege to talk to you. Enjoy the remainder of the Super Bowl.
Did you get your new Leafs jersey yet?
No, I don't have a Leafs jersey. Why would I have a Leafs jersey? I'm not a Leafs fan. I got a hoodie.
But you're secretly 11.
What? I'm not secretly...
You're secretly 11 years old.
Well, I mean, not every day. Just some days.
Let's be honest. Today's one of those days. Do you have your new Leafs jersey, yes or no?
No, I do not have a new Leafs jersey.
You're going to go out and get it later today, correct?
I'm going to go out and get a jersey and put another dude's name in the back.
You know what? Excellent choice.
Yes. Mr. Ratto, have fun.
I'd go with Inga Hammerstrom.
Inga Hammerstrom. Yeah. No, I was thinking more Claire Alexander, the milkman.
See? You warmed to the idea already.
I have. Take care, Ray.
All righty. See you, Jeff.
Ray Ratto is a senior insider for CSN Bay Area. I can't imagine Ray Ratto lose at the Super Bowl. His column is tremendous, by the way, on the website. It is great. The biggest sports event of the weekend ain't the Super Bowl. Not in San Francisco. The biggest sports event of the weekend is Golden State and Oklahoma City, because Golden State wants him some Kevin Durant when he becomes a free agent. So this is like a selling. This is going to be like a... As Ratto said, it's like a job fair with 19,000 people interviewing one guy. So that'll be the biggest sports event of the weekend in San Francisco. Kevin Barker, you know him as my Baseball Central co-host. I wonder, Barker, are you going to be watching the Super Bowl? You're a big Panthers fan, aren't you?
I'm a huge Panthers fan. How did you know that?
Yeah, I just figured that out.
Travis seems to tell me you're grumpy today. Is that true?
I'm not grumpy. I'm in a fine mood today.
Why would you be grumpy on Super Bowl week? I don't get it.
Super Bowl week? Big deal. It's Super Bowl. It's just another football game.
Yeah, who are you rooting for?
Me? I have no cheering interest. I mean, you live in Denver. You're cheering for Denver, right?
Well, no, I don't live in Denver.
Well, you have. Well,
no.
You like Denver. You used to live in Denver.
I did, yes.
Okay.
I'm a huge Peyton Manning fan, yes.
Yeah, so therefore I'm cheering for Carolina.
No, I wouldn't have it any other way, Jeff.
I have no vested interest in this game. I'll watch the anthem. I'll watch a bit of the football game.
How about the commercials?
I don't care about commercials. See, no. Now you're going to get me going, because everybody in this country, you know what, Kevin? Don't become one of those Canadians who gets worked up about, well, we don't get to see the great American commercials. They're commercials. They're selling you stuff you don't need. They're selling you stuff that in some cases kills you or damages your health, at least.
I still have the capability of getting you fired up.
Well, no, it's just that because I know I'm going to get this. This is a Canadian thing. We don't get the cool commercials. Go watch them online if it's that big a deal to you. Again, commercials.
Now it's a show topic. Now you got something to talk about.
Take calls on it. I can take
That's
calls
right.
on it. By the way, we need your Bundesliga picks for this weekend.
Yeah, I heard you a couple of days ago saying you wanted me to call in and give you my picks.
Yeah, I'm gonna pull up the schedule here.
That's tremendous.
Before we do that, Mr. Barker, I want to talk to you as a former first baseman of some renown. We had Chris Colabello on earlier talking about the fact that there's going to be a dirt infield surface at the Rogers Center, still going to be artificial turf, but the infield surface is going to be dirt. I thought at the end of the year, the field became a home field advantage for the Blue Jays. Teams were never comfortable on it. And, you know, I talked about Kevin Cash. Every game that Tampa Bay played here before the game, Kevin Cash made some comment about the turf. And, you know, Joe Girardi, the same thing, some comment about the turf. Now, as Chris Colabello said, you know, you're still going to have balls bouncing in front of you on the turf. So you would figure that it will still play the same slow speed that it played before. But are guys going to have to get used to being on a dirt infield surface when they're at home?
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, I tried to, whenever I heard about this, I tried to think back of the times I played on a dirt infield and a turf outfield, and I can't remember a time. So I called a buddy of mine named Paul Yonish, who's one of the middle infielders for Baltimore.
Yep.
Who's been in, you know, Tropicana Field and done things of that nature and is very good, basically made a living off of fielding ground balls. And I said, what's the big deal? And he said, a lot of it is, you know, this may sound simple, some of it is guys are used to wearing a certain shoe. Are those shoes going to be good, you know, taking ground balls on dirt and then running to the outfield, which is turf?
Mm-hmm.
That's one reason. That's one thing that an infielder is going to have to think about. Another thing is sometimes on turf, an infielder, I know when I played at the Rogers Center, you could basically on occasion let the ball play you because you know on turf more times than not what that ball's going to do. You could get a little lazy, not get the backside down as much, not stay through balls as much as you have to on dirt. Now you have to. Now you have to play the baseball. You have to come and get the baseball. You have to be aggressive with the ball and the lip. You have to remember that lip separating the dirt to the outfield. You can't play around that. You have to either play in front of it or you have to play behind it, and you can't let that lip dictate what you're going to do with the baseball. So these are things that you just mentioned with the home field advantage. Is this going to be a home field advantage for the Blue Jays, not having the slow turf, not having, you know, the certain bounces? But it gets back to that point. The Blue Jays don't rely a lot on speed.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to hit the ball in the seats, as we well know, and extra base hits. I'm not real sure it has anything to do with home field advantage other than it's going to keep guys on the field. You know, I know a guy named Jeff Blair that always speaks about, well, there's nobody ever wants to come here because of the turf. Now you have guys standing on dirt more times than you have them standing on, especially in the infield. You know, your best players are the Blue Jays, most of them, besides Jose Bautista, Donaldson, Tulowitzki, Encarnacion, when he plays first, are in the infield.
Mm-hmm.
These things are going to keep these guys on the field and make it a little bit easier for John Gibbons to make out a lineup and keep those main guys, those core guys on the field more times than not.
You know, Kevin, we asked callers earlier today because of the season's ticket holder function tonight, which, you know, what question they would most like to ask either John Gibbons or Mark Shapiro or Ross Atkins at this function. What questions do you have right now of the Blue Jays as we're 3 weeks from the start of spring training, and maybe a bit less than that. We're less than that, actually, from the start of spring training. What questions do you have about the Blue Jays?
Well, you know, the obvious ones would be the Bautista and Encarnacion. You know, I think I've come to the realization that neither one of these guys are coming back. That's a personal thought here. You know, nothing's happened so far. I've been to the realization if you want to re-sign those two guys, it would have been done already.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be one of the questions. I think that question's been sort of beat to death. It's going to play itself out. The first question, if I had to stand up and ask one, would be the Donaldson question. There's a little bit of when your GM leaves, maybe not on such good terms, you're coming in, you want to be putting butts in the seats. You want people to come and watch your team play. You want young guys. You want young fans to come and watch your team play. Josh Donaldson is the front runner for those things. Why isn't that taken care of? Why isn't something there, instead of having that little bit of a black eye on your PR with Josh Donaldson, just have it taken care of. Have him happy coming to spring training. All of those things. That would be a question. How many games is Russell Martin going to catch? That would be a big question because, you know, everything starts with your quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You say Troy Tulowitzki may be your quarterback, but everything as we know, Jeff, the guy putting the right fingers down, can you get 135 games minus those R.A. Dickey starts? Who's going to catch those 135 games? Can Russell Martin do that? So that would be the couple of questions I would ask, and it's a big year for the Blue Jays. They're either, I think, one of those teams that's going to climb the cliff and get higher and be the front runner in the American League East for the next 5 years, or they can go the other way. I think this is a big time for their organization, and so there's going to be some tough decisions have to be made here real soon.
In conversation with Kevin Barker, Baseball Central co-host, along with yours truly. All right, Mr. Barker, by popular demand, I have to get your Bundesliga picks. There are people who pine for this.
Wow.
And here we go. 2 p.m. Friday. These are only, we're only doing the Sportsnet World games, the games that are on Sportsnet, all right? So Borussia Mönchengladbach against Werder Bremen, 2 p.m. Friday on Sportsnet World. Who do you have and what's the score?
What's the second one?
Werder Bremen.
Werder Bremen. I know that's probably not a very good team because you can't really say it and I can't say it either. I'm going to pick those guys. I'm going to go 1-0.
For who? For Werder Bremen?
Werder Bremen, yeah.
Okay, all right, 1-0.
Was that a bad pick?
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, because you can't say it, so I figured it's a bad pick.
That's okay. Here's our favorite team, Bayern Munich against Bayer Leverkusen.
Bayern Munich is 3-1.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. By the way, you know, Bayer Leverkusen, you know, Bayer Aspern? It's from Bayer, B-A-Y-E-R, same thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Learn something new every day.
Absolutely. That will be at 12 p.m. Saturday on Sportsnet 1. Hamburg SV against your favorite team, FC Cologne. That's at 9 a.m. Sunday on Sportsnet World. You
well,
got to
go FC Cologne.
Absolutely.
I know they're not a very good team, I don't think.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go 2-1.
That's all right. They've got a chance.
Upset. I'm calling upset.
They're close in the standings. That's actually pretty good.
And nice.
This is the tough one now. This is one you're going to have to put your thinking cap on for this one. Okay. It's at 11:30 a.m. Sunday on Sportsnet World. TSG Hoffenheim against SV Darmstadt. This is a tough one.
Wait, what's the second one?
SV Darmstadt. I'll tell you, neither one of these teams are particularly good.
I'm going to go with FCF. What'd you say?
Well, there's TSG Hoffenheim and SV Darmstadt 98.
I'm going to go that 98 because I can't say the first two words. I'm going to go 98.
Yeah.
Usually I think when there's a number after, they're not very good, but I'm still going to go 98. I'm going to go big score because usually when two teams are not going good, they score a lot.
Okay.
I'm going to go 5-1.
5-1?
Yeah.
Darmstadt's only scored 19 goals in 19 games.
It.
Okay.
I'm calling it right now.
All right, 5-1.
Well, you said both teams are not good.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Usually they score a lot of goals.
There you go. 5-1. Mr. Barker,
going.
It was great talking to you. We'll do this again very, very, very soon.
Can't wait.
See
Thanks
ya.
A lot. Thanks for having me.
All righty. Kevin Barker, Baseball Central. I am looking forward to doing that show again. I really am. And there you go, Barker's Bundesliga picks. The team with the number at the end is generally good. Unless you're Hanover 96. That's interesting. Hey, there's a lot of numbers. FC Schalke 04, FSV Mainz 05, FC Ingolstadt 04, SV Darmstadt 98, Hanover 96. It's like 96 proof, I guess. Eric Smith, our Raptors radio voice, is with the team in Portland. Raptors getting ready to wrap up. Raptors wrap up. A bizarre road trip. They play in Portland tonight, then they come home, then they continue again, then they're back here for the All-Star game. Eric Smith will join us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Oh, you're gonna take me home tonight. Oh, down beside that red firelight. Oh, you're gonna let it all hang out. Fat bottom girls, you make the rockin' world go round.
You know, you probably need some time off when you find yourself walking around whistling the 1-800 Cars for Kids theme, which I found myself doing lately. Now, there's nothing, I mean, it's a fine organization. I'm not saying anything about that. It's just I've noticed on a trip back from the gentleman's room today that I was whistling 1-800 Cars for Kids coming out of the washroom, which is disturbing. Hockey Central at noon is just around the corner. And the reason I know that is because it's 11:37 and 23 minutes away from noon. Hockey Central at noon just around the corner. Your Toronto Raptors playing the Portland Trail Blazers tonight. Trailblazers 24-26, Raps 33-16. The Moda Center. Now, this is interesting. The Moda Center is one of four arenas the Raptors have not won a game in the last three seasons. I'm going to bring in Eric Smith, our Raptors radio voice in Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Hope that he hasn't read the Raptors game notes and ask him, Eric, what the other three arenas are where the Raptors have not won a game in the last three seasons.
Golden State, I believe, would be one of them.
Yep.
I want to say Houston, potentially.
Yep. You got one more to go. This is really good.
And I do not have the notes open. I woke up about 4 minutes ago.
You sound really good for somebody who woke up 4 minutes ago. Because if I'd woken up 4 minutes ago, I'd still be horking and snorting and all that stuff.
Pillow beside the bed and doing the do re mi la la la, just trying to get my voice awake.
Mm-hmm. What about the pillow beside the bed?
I was doing the do re mi. Don't worry about that. I don't go anywhere else with that, Jeff.
He uses a pillow to wake your voice.
You know, I'm gonna say Charlotte because I think that's the place they've had a ton of issues, and I know that they've had a couple of near misses. So I'll go with Charlotte.
AT&T Center, San Antonio. Unless Jim LaBombard's wrong, which I doubt.
No, Jimmy's rarely wrong. Yeah.
That's pretty good though, because I Toyota Center. I would have got Golden State. I might have got San Antonio. I wouldn't have gotten Toyota Center, but there you go. So Moda Center, where the Trailblazers play, one of four arenas the Raptors have not won a game in the last three seasons. The Blazers are 24-26, but they're kind of better than their record indicates, aren't they?
They are. In fact, I would say next to Toronto, you've got to argue that. I mean, you almost throw Golden State out because they've just been so damn good all season. But Portland's won five games in a row. They're in the midst of a seven-game homestand like the Raptors just finished up, and they could end up going 6-1 over that homestand if they pick up the win tonight. So you're kind of catching the Blazers, in spite of their record below 500, you're catching them potentially at the worst time, at the hottest time of the season for them. So it's going to be a tough one. And you mentioned the Moda Center. It is one of the toughest buildings to play in. In fact, we were talking about it last night over some drinks last night out at dinner. The toughest arenas based on the loudest arenas. And you would put the Moda Center right up there with Golden State. Toronto gets a lot of cred, and understandably so, for the crowds that they draw at the ACC. But in terms of sheer noise and the effect of the home crowd on a team, I would put, say, Oklahoma City, Golden State, and Portland among the top three, and the Raptor fan base and the ACC would probably be in that top five, but I actually probably would put those three above them. And you got to throw in the Utah Jazz as well. They are tough buildings to play in because of the crowd, and I think that plays into the reason why the Raptors have had their lack of success against the Blazers and some of those other clubs we just mentioned.
Hey, Eric, Norm Powell expected to get the start tonight in James Johnson's absence, or do you expect James back?
I do not expect James back. That's not locked in stone, but I saw James yesterday at the hotel, and he was still on crutches, so I would be absolutely shocked if he played tonight. The Raptors are going to have their shoot around in about 90 minutes or so. I'll be heading to it, but I would be shocked if James Johnson plays. And I think the Norm Powell one is an interesting question because he didn't play a fantastic game the other night against Phoenix. I'm not sure that he stood out really defensively either, but at the same time, I'm not sure that he stood out in a bad way either.
Mm-hmm.
The tough thing, I think, is maybe it was matchup driven against Phoenix. Maybe it'd be a little bit different against Portland. I think they're undersized when they play Norm Powell because then it also forces DeMar DeRozan at times to potentially have to guard or be guarded by opposing threes quite a bit, like you saw the other night with P.J. Tucker. And again, that's why I say perhaps more matchup-driven when you talk about what Phoenix did in throwing a guy like P.J. Tucker, a defensive-minded, hard-nosed guy, and throwing him on DeRozan. That makes for a tough night when you don't have another guy with the length, the size, the strength, the defensive tenacity of a Damari Carroll, let alone a James Johnson, to play at that three spot and take some of that pressure off of a guy like DeRozan. And I think it puts a ton on Norm Powell. That said, what's your option? The other option would be to start Terrence Ross, but then do you mess with how well he's played by taking him out of that role and that comfort zone as that guy coming off the bench? He's been so fantastic at that now for the last 4 or 5 weeks. I can appreciate where Dwayne Casey doesn't want to mess with that rotation, and hence the reason he looks at a Norm Powell. So I honestly am not sure what way he'll lean tonight, again, assuming that Johnson is not going to go.
Yeah, and you wouldn't start small, would you?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't know that I would suddenly just completely change the entire thing and
right.
You know, start moving out a Jonas Valanciunas or moving out a Luis Scola, who started every game this year, to start totally tinkering that way. I think the one guy that some might look at is, could a guy like Anthony Bennett give you some minutes? Whether he starts or not, could you see him play a little bit more? And, you know, not to be necessarily critical of the guy, I was high on Anthony Bennett based on what I saw last summer in the Pan Am Games and then at the FIBA Americas qualifier down in Mexico City. And I know that we're talking about, again, Pan Ams and FIBAs versus the NBA, but I thought he played fantastic last year and was one of the best players, if not the best player at times, for Canada on the floor. And I thought, you know, he's kind of riding that high coming into the season. Now, he hasn't been able to find consistent minutes. He's battled through a bit of a back issue. And all of a sudden now, Damari Carroll's down, James Johnson's down, and Anthony Bennett doesn't even see the floor the other night. So you got to wonder, where is he at in terms of either the coach's comfort zone with Bennett, his health? I haven't heard anything that you know leads me to believe that the back isn't fine or fine enough to play. So it says something. If you're down two men and you still can't get on the floor, you know, where's your game at right now, and how much more work do you have to put in to make sure you get in that rotation that you can contribute? Because he's a guy with the length. And he's got the ability to stretch out the floor on the offensive end, too. He can guard his man and use his size defensively. Could he be a guy that helps the Raptors, you know, however long this absence is, where you're without both Carroll and Johnson?
You know, Eric, Travis McKenzie, our producer, was talking earlier about the Trailblazers. We're talking about Damian Lillard. I'm not going to say the guy doesn't get enough credit, because I think basketball fans really know what a good player he is. But he really is, he still deserves a little more credit than he gets, doesn't he?
I think he probably does, and he's sort of lost in the fact that, especially now with LaMarcus Aldridge gone, I think he's lost in something that maybe Raptor fans and players could relate to. You're in that market that maybe doesn't get as much attention, and you're a hell of a player, so you stand out individually, but maybe you don't get that pub and that cred and that attention as much as other guys because you're not in that major market. You're not on television all the time, and now you're on a team that's struggling, that lost to LaMarcus Aldridge. You've been below 500, so you're kind of an afterthought a lot of times until people look down and go, wow, look at the season that this guy's having. Mm-hmm. And you look at the numbers that he's putting up and having a career year type of season, and he's a large reason, the reason, alongside C.J. McCollum, why they've been able to stay afloat and stay in the race and stay in the hunt for that final seed in the, you know, in the Western Conference playoff picture. He's absolutely fantastic, and he's one of the quickest guys in the league, one of the most dangerous point guards, I think, you know, on the ball in terms of his ability to score or play, you know, set up guys and make plays. And then further to all that, for what it's worth, away from the floor, one of the nicest guys as well, and I think a lot of that plays into how popular he is in this city specifically.
Rumors yesterday, and I know we haven't had a chance to talk about this, rumors yesterday that the Raptors, I think it was Mark Stein reported, the Raptors had some interest in P.J. Tucker and Markieff Morris of the Phoenix Suns. We are getting to the time where you do start talking about the trade deadline. My first reaction was I didn't know exactly what P.J. Tucker would give them. I mean, I guess maybe a little bit of depth if, you know, Damari Carroll's health is going to be an ongoing concern. But what did you make of those two rumors, and how would you see those two guys fitting in? And I don't want to talk about every trade rumor, but this seems to be a pretty legitimate source.
Yeah, I saw both of those from Mark Stein. I think the interesting question would be, who would you be giving up? And again, that's where we kind of dance that fine line of getting into the fantasy talk and the trade rumors. But who's going out? Because if P.J. Tucker is added to this team, I think he absolutely could help the squad in terms of his defense and his tenacity, his edge, his ability to stretch the floor with a three-point shot. He's a heck of a three-point shooter. I think he could absolutely add to this team, assuming that, say, James Johnson isn't here, because he fills the void that a James Johnson would provide. And again, I'm not saying ship out James Johnson. I'm saying I think he'd be that James Johnson type player. I don't know that you'd suddenly start P.J. Tucker over Damari Carroll if you had a healthy Damari Carroll, but you would certainly have him as a backup at that three and even at times playing the four if you didn't have a James Johnson on this team. But if both Johnson and Tucker are here, how much does that stretch out your rotation? And how difficult does that make things on Dwayne Casey? I mean, it's a positive problem, I guess, to have depth. but it's a big decision then for the coach to make. And then from a Markieff Morris standpoint, could he help this team? I think it could absolutely help this team. But would he be your starting power forward, or would he be the guy coming off the bench to either back up Luis Scola still or Patrick Patterson? Because I think if you add a Markieff Morris and you still have Scola and Patterson, I'm not sure where the rotation plays out, because I think Morris has more offensive talent than a Patterson does at this point and does more than Patterson. But I like the way that Patterson's been playing defensively. So I think the tough thing will be, Jeff, is if you're adding to this team, you're going to have to be subtracting a player because you're already at your 15-man roster.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to have to be one of your existing guys along with perhaps one of those four picks that you've got coming up. So yeah, I think for me it's going to be, no matter what trade it is, who's the one going out? Because the other way to look at it too is when this team is healthy, and who knows when that's going to be, but when this team is healthy, your bench already didn't really include James Johnson. He was thrust into the starting role,
right,
again, so that Dwayne Casey didn't upset that rotation. But your second unit already is pretty locked in with Joseph and Patterson and Bismack Biyombo and Terrence Ross. So if you're making a deal, I would say it's got to be a deal that is for a guy who is so clearly heads and tails above a Luis Scola as your starting four, or you're now starting Patterson and coming with somebody off the bench in that four spot. If you're moving one of your younger guys, like a Nogueira or a Caboclo or DeLon Wright or a Norm Powell, for, again, a Tucker or a Morris or whomever, well, where is that guy playing in your already solidified second unit? And how much better does that player make your team? I think that's going to be the interesting discussion for Masai Ujiri.
Yeah, and, you know, I think we Smitty and I talked a little bit about this. Doug Smith and I talked a little bit about it as well. We've only got 90 seconds here. But the idea that maybe if you're the Raptors, you might want to bolster yourself with kind of a veteran guard, even just if you're going to rely on Corey and Kyle so much. I mean, you can't have everything. You can't be too deep at every position, but maybe that might be a way you want to go as well.
Yeah, and I think there's a ton of validity to that, especially when you look the other night and you think, you know, when Kyle Lowry hurt that wrist, how long is he going to be down? Did he break the wrist? Did he sprain the wrist? He's going to miss any action. Corey Joseph's your starter now. Okay, now DeLon Wright, suddenly your backup, and how long can you go with that? And is that good enough? So there's no denying that having a veteran guard would be a great thing. I think, again, kind of repeat myself, but the tough decision will be for Masai Ujiri. Who is the one that you, or the one or the ones you subtract from this team?
Yep.
You know, are you prepared in the rookie season to trade DeLon Wright, to trade Norm Powell? Are you prepared to give up on a Lucas Nogueira when you've seen some bright lights from him finally this year, and then you project forward and say Bismack Biyombo is probably opting out at the end of the year, and you could lose him? You might need some depth in that front court at the center position. Are you going to give up on a Caboclo that you've invested so much time into? You know, those would be the guys that you would automatically think, yeah, trade them. But you also have to look forward and say, but who will we have on our roster next year? How much better does the guy coming in make our team? Does the guy coming in, again, fit into our rotation? Is it going to push guys down there? I mean, do you want Ross not playing? Do you want Joseph not playing? Do you want Biyombo not playing? You know, do you want Patterson not playing? Is Scola suddenly go from being a starter to not seeing the floor at all because you brought somebody in that's going to start and now Patterson's still your backup? I mean, how does that all work? That's going to be the interesting kind of chemistry experiment for Masai Ujiri with the deadline a couple of weeks away.
Thanks a lot, man, Eric. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank
Take
you.
Care. Eric Smith, our Raptors radio analyst. That's it for us. Hockey Central is at noon is next. Paul Stewart, former NHL referee, joins the guys. Ross Atkins, Blue Jays GM. He'll be on with us tomorrow at 11. Have a great day, everybody.